Morning Tucson. This is the Jump In Show, where we recognize the community leaders that jump in every day to help Tucson be a better place. I have some really special guests this morning. I'm really excited to have Michelle Conklin, who's the director of the executive director of the Tucson Botanical Gardens, and another gentleman called Adam Farrell Wortman, and he's the director of horticulture of the Tucson Botanical Garden. So these are two good friends of ours here in the community. It pretty much, when you get a chance to go out to the Tucson Botanical Gardens, these two folks touch everything that is inside the Botanical Gardens and all the things that happen in the community regarding the Tucson Botanical Gardens. Michelle has really her hands in it. Michelle, we're going to start off with you a little bit today and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've really enjoyed the job.
Oh, geez. Tom, you and I have known each other for a long time. But yeah, I've been at the Tucson Botanical Gardens for just about over 20 years. Lucky enough to do that. But I've had a long history in nonprofit. Came from Michigan girl, where I was the director of a visual and performing arts center. But before that, lots and lots of different, had a very strange path to where I am today. But it's been an incredibly rewarding, probably the job of my life that I love.
Yes, Michelle and I have known each other since Pima Air and Space days. We've been involved one way or another for over 20 years in the attractions industry. And if you really haven't had a chance to take a look outside of your house, get off that couch, we have one of the most diverse collection of attractions. And the what's really special about most of the attractions is they're associated with a mission, something to do with how to help the public and also the community. So, Michelle, let's talk a little bit about your mission statement.
Right. You know, our mission statement has changed over the years. When I first came to the gardens back in, you know, that was 2002, it was a sleepy little place. And with a mission to live sustainably in the desert. But when you looked at our property, it's a very historic property founded by a family and also through a gentleman, Harrison Yoakum, who started the actual organization of Tucson Botanical Gardens. And that property really told a story about the history of gardening in the Sonoran Desert. And the family was, they were not only incredible gardeners and naturalists, but Mrs. Porter was an artist. And you know, because we're in the middle of the city, we had many, many different stories to tell. So our mission statement evolved to the gardens, Tucson Botanical Gardens, connects people with plants and nature through art, science, history, and culture. So it's a way to inspire people, those especially those non-naturalists, to become naturalists and garden lovers.
Now, I know you all have been leaders in water conservation. So, Adam, you're in charge of all of the plants and everything really that people see out there. So just tell us a little bit about how important water conservation is to the Tucson Botanical Gardens.
Oh, well, I'm happy to say at the moment all my water clocks are off because we've had some fantastic rain. So, sorry about that. But yes, we're always looking for ways to improve our water conservation. We have a collection that is not just desert plants, not just arid adapted plants, and so the responsibility, the water responsibility, is even that much higher, because we are going to use more water than we're going to get rainfall wise. We're going to use more water than other large properties, and so we want to use only as much water as we need to have a thriving garden.
Yeah, when I moved here from the Midwest, the word water conservation really wasn't part of our vocabulary. Then I began to see these large containers on the side of the road and or in the backyards of houses. And I said, what the heck is that? Can you tell us a little bit about one of those methods of saving water?
Yeah, so you're probably talking about water cisterns. So that's capturing water flowing off of rooftops or possibly water flowing down the road. If you can grab some of that, hold it for a while and use it when needed. We have water cisterns at the gardens. We also use other passive water harvesting methods like French drains. We have in-ground cisterns to capture water that's flowing down our pathways, for example. And yeah, we don't let a drop of water off a property.
So important part of that is encouraging folks to put in native plants that require a little bit of water. And in the Midwest and California, I notice there's a lot of what they call oleanders, you know, because they take over and they spread out and they're good. They cover a lot, but they're not necessarily a native plant, are they?
Oh, no, not at all. So I would say the first iteration of landscaping in Tucson was based on Mediterranean style plants and design. And then it was only probably at the turn of the millennium when native plants were really being embraced and adopted by landscapers. I grew up in Tucson, and so in the 80s, everyone had a lawn. By the time I graduated high school, almost all lawns were gone. Tucson as a community has made huge strides in water conservation without being mandated to do so.
But when you do come to the gardens, I will say, you will not always see everything that is appropriate. We've got some heavy water use plants because of our historical collection.
Right.
But Adam has really implemented these programs and policies and procedures in order to really capture the water correctly, monitor the growing patterns. But our purpose as a public garden is really for displays and also for teaching as well.
Well, and with our mission statement of connecting people to plants and nature, right. I want to provide sort of a bridge. So a lot of Tucsonans aren't originally Tucsonans. They're from places with a lot more water. People, almost everyone I've ever met has some kind of nostalgic connection to a plant. My grandma grew roses, for example.
Your director loves lilacs.
Yes. And so we want to provide them that plant. And then they can come and learn our native plants.
Now, there are varieties, though, that you find in the Midwest, but isn't there, correct me if I'm wrong, is there a plant called like a desert rose out there or anything that maybe it was from the Midwest, but they brought it over here and they figured out how to grow it with less water?
Well, actually, a few years ago, we were part of a rose trial, Roses for Sustainability, yes. And that was trialing different roses that breeders have been breeding. Roses are famous for being one of the most unsustainable plants because they require lots of fertilizer, lots of water. And so this organization was handing out awards to growers who could grow or breed a rose that didn't need all of that stuff. And so we were one of the trialing sites for that organization, yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. We only have about 30 seconds, and just a quick question, because this is something, growing up in the Midwest, we all had tomato plants in the backyard. I cannot grow. I've tried the upside-down tomato plant. I've tried all kinds. What is there a secret?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
I'll tell you after break, I guess.
All right. Yes, absolutely. That's a good lead-in. Hey, I want to let you know that the Urban Oasis is a word that we hear a lot about the Tucson Botanical Gardens. And we'll be back in just a few minutes to hear all about that and why they got this Reader's Choice, the best Tucson Botanical Gardens in the world. Well, welcome back here to Jump In. And if you were listening to the first segment, yeah, I'm sure you're going to be excited about listening. How can you grow tomatoes in the Sonoran Desert? So I am here with Adam and Michelle from the Tucson Botanical Garden. So Adam, am I able to grow tomatoes in my backyard?
You sure are. So the difference, though, is we have sort of two seasons for tomatoes. Instead of one long summer, we have two short ones. If you want to think of it like that. So if you're from the Midwest, you in grow tomatoes, you usually want those big meaty tomatoes, big heirlooms.
Tasty tomatoes.
Yeah. And you can still get a very tasty tomato here, but you want to find the tomatoes with the shortest season possible. So you want a tomato with a 50, 60 day ripening period instead of 110.
Now, can you grow them from a seed, or you want to grow them with the little plants?
If you grow them from seed, you got to start inside.
Okay.
Really early before it's warm enough for them to be outside. If you don't want to start inside because you don't have the space or you don't want the trouble, start from plants mid-March, get them in the ground as soon as possible. You'll get a crop before the worst of the summer heat hits. And then if you water them enough, they'll stay alive through the worst of the heat, but you won't get any tomatoes. And then once the monsoon comes, you'll get a second crop, and you'll get that second crop in the fall. So you'll get like a late spring crop, and then you'll get the biggest crop will be the fall crop.
Great. Well, only here will you hear how to grow a tomato in the Sonoran Desert from the experts from the Tucson Botanical Gardens. Now, Michelle, there's two things I noticed. Well, maybe I noticed a lot more than two things on your website. And what was really exciting to hear that in 2023, by USA Today, just a small little newspaper, community newspaper of the United States, but that Reader's Choice, which means to me the folks that not only visit you, but the folks that are interested in you, voted to make you the best botanical garden, I presume in the United States, maybe the world. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was really exciting. And I really have no idea how it happened, because they have a panel of judges that they select, and those judges nominate 25 botanical gardens around the country to be the Reader's Choice of the best botanical garden in the country. We came in at number 4, which was amazing.
Yes.
Because it was just a total surprise. And then once the 25 nominees are chosen, then the word goes out into the greater world, and there's a voting that takes place, and you can go online. I have absolutely incredible news that today we were notified that we were nominated again, which we could not believe would happen.
Fantastic
A second time. A lot of that is really prominence in the community, in the botanical garden world. I believe that some of the exhibits and our reputation has grown over the years, since Frida Kahlo. The Frida Kahlo exhibit kind of put us on the map. Rosie the corpse flower plant, as well as just our gardens with the help of Adnam and his team, have really raised to a whole new level. A few years ago, I gave a tour of our garden to large garden botanical garden directors, San Diego. I can't remember who else, but it was quite intimidating, to tell you the truth. And I was walking through the sensory garden, and they were looking and just overflowing with compliments. And I was slightly apologizing for our small scale. And Ari Novi from the San Diego Botanic Garden looked at me and said, "You are a big garden on a small footprint, because everything we do is big with big garden mentality and aesthetics."
Yeah, we have a wonderful zoo here that is also confined by the boundaries, and it's one of the best little zoos, I think, in the world, the Reed Park Zoo.
It is.
And we had some folks a couple of shows ago that talked to us a lot about, what they do to create that environment that, if you really want to look, you'll see that the roads are pretty close by. But really not, because once you walk through the front gate, you're in a whole other world. And I know you probably spent a lot of time making sure that the experiences when folks come in there, they forget about that they're in a really urban area. And being the urban oasis, as you talk about, if you happen to be on Michelle's Facebook friends list, you get to hear, maybe even see sometimes, how she takes a morning walk through the botanical garden. So I'm very curious, and hopefully our listeners are, So when you get there in the morning and, you know, you're probably on the way thinking about all the things you have to do and the meetings that you have to do, but it seems like you start your day with a breath of fresh air, so to speak. So take us a little bit on that virtual or that tour virtually through the radio here on the kinds of things that you see, kinds of things that you think about when you're walking through the Tucson Botanical Gardens.
Well, I would bet you that Adam and I have completely different thought processes.
Well, we have time. We'll ask Adam, too.
But for me, I enter through that side service gate,
yes.
And it takes me right into the historical part of the garden. And when you get there before everyone, or you get there early in the morning, what strikes you so much is the light, how it filters through the canopy of trees, and the sounds of the birds. And then there's the pathways haven't been cleaned up yet. So sometimes you get a little bit of crunch under your feet. But I take a walk through the historical garden, walk through that path. I always see hummingbirds. I always hear the crows. Sometimes I hear the great horned owl that hoots up in the tree. And sometimes the Cooper's hawk has left a bit of their breakfast on a pathway as well. And it's a way to clear your head and to get your mind set up for the day that's going to happen, because as beautiful as the garden is, when you go to work, work is work. You go to work.
Yeah, you know, having worked in the attraction business for almost 50 years, believe it or not, it's sometimes difficult to take a view from what the visitor sees. So I'm sure you're constantly reminded.
We are. And those early morning walks, or those walks with Adam, so we try to separate ourselves, and actually we're probably far more critical sometimes than the public is. It's like your own home when you invite company over You notice the dust bunnies and they think your home is a palace. It's the very same thing. We have a laundry list of things that we really want to get to. I just came back from a visit to the Naples Botanical Garden and came back with a slew of pictures of trash cans, signs, restroom signs, because it's all those little things. You know, God is in the details, and it's in the details in your plant collection, but as well as your facility.
Well, yes. My wife hated to take trips to Disney or whatever the amusement park or theme park was, because I was taking pictures of gates and entry levels and signs. And I actually had a scrapbook that was labeled signs and fences, because wherever I ended up going to work, I had my favorites, and even a garbage can. The neatest one right now that I see in Tucson it reminds me of my zoo days, where they had this big lion, I mean, full size, three-dimensional, probably made out of fiberglass, and it had a big sign on it said, "Feed me." And what it was a garbage can with a vacuum. So when you got close to the lion's mouth, you heard a roar, and then the paper was sucked up.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Okay. And I think there's something now in the city of Tucson that does that. But Adam, we got another a minute, 30 seconds or so. As Michelle said, that you would probably describe your virtual walk a little bit different. I think you teased it a little bit, Michelle, but hopefully you're enjoying it where they're not taking notes for the entire time you're out there.
Well, actually, quite early on, I had to make a deal with my daughter when we were visiting the gardens that I would put in my visitor eyes versus my working eyes. Because working eyes, the gardens are never done. They're always something more to do. So so to enjoy the space, you definitely have to take a step back, put a different set. A different set of eyes on, different mentality. But I always try to make some time during the day where I can appreciate the gardens as a garden and not my job.
Absolutely. And, of course, you have a team of folks.
Oh, yes, and a fantastic
kind
team.
Kind of we got a little bit of the daily routine of your staff.
Well, it does start with a walk around.
Yes.
Every staff member, I tend to assign areas to individuals. So they can take some ownership of that space, and then they know that space better than anyone else. But they walk. I ask my gardeners to walk the whole gardens, and to see what there is to see, And then from there, you start plotting your day. So you probably had an idea of your week to start with, but then irrigation might break overnight, or there might have been
a bathroom might back up.
There might have been a bathroom back up. There might have been a hawk eating. So, so we address all those things first thing in the morning.
That's really cool to hear. I mean, it's to take your work experience, put yourself in the place of the visitor, I think is one of the reasons why Tucson Botanical Gardens and a lot of the attractions are very successful. Well, we'll be back with segment three with Michelle and Adam from the Tucson Botanical Gardens. And we're just getting started here with those stories that only you will hear on Jump In at KVOI, 10:30 a.m. Well, good morning, everyone. We're here at KVOI, 10:30 a.m., The Talk. And our show is called Jump In, where we get to feature the folks that really jump in and get the job done. And today's guests are Michelle Conklin and Adam Farrell Wortman from the Tucson Botanical Gardens. And we've had a really wonderful conversation over the first two segments. Before we get back to our guest, Michelle, this is Jump In. We're a show that happens every weekday at 9 a.m. featuring some community leaders who get to interview other community leaders. And coming up tomorrow, Dr. Ed Ackerley from the University of Arizona School of Eller will be back with a group of guests talking about what they're involved in the community. Now, let's get back, Michelle, as we were talking about Tucson Botanical Gardens. And I wanted to tell just a quick little story. We're not going to get too much involved in what happened in COVID, because we all experienced that. But, you know, Michelle and I got to see each other fairly regularly for the last 20 years. And then there was that two-year time period, maybe a year and a half, where Michelle and I, no reason, didn't get a chance to see each other or talk to each other. And I employed a really wonderful fellow called Tim Vimmerstedt, and he was the former director of the Desert Museum, as well as Rawhide. And he also worked for me when I was at Old Tucson back in the late 90s. And we were so excited to come see Michelle, again, because we had known her for many, many years. And very cordial, Michelle, when we got there. And we were happy to see each other. And both Tim and I, and we didn't talk about this until after we left, but what we saw was this amazing office full of visions of what the Tucson Botanical Garden had become, or more importantly, what the community and input from the board and, of course, from the staff on what's going to happen to Tucson Botanical Garden in the future. Now, we have a couple of segments left, and we're going to talk about the future in segment four. But I want to do is talk a little bit to Michelle about, my goodness, did you expect to be the keeper of the vision of the Tucson Botanical Gardens? And how has that really shaped when we go and experience the Tucson Botanical Gardens of today?
Well, I don't know. I think I've always been the kind of a person that's always have taken on small organizations and figured out ways and dreamed of ways to make them bigger and better. I did that when I was in Michigan with the Crooked Tree Center for the Arts. It was in an 1890s Victorian church. We had a 280-seat theater, pottery studios, ballet studios, galleries, individual classrooms, and while I was there, we pulled off the aluminum siding and restored it to its 1890s glory and added galleries. And so, you know, I don't know where that comes from. I think a life in the arts, growing up as a little girl, being involved in theater and music and dance, and my father was a musician. I think arts and culture is the best basis for business, for entrepreneurship, I think, that any child can have. And I really credit my parents for believing in that as far as the way I was raised. And then when I came to Tucson Botanical Gardens, like I said before, it was a little sleepy, and I could see what could be.
Yes.
I've had the good fortune to be on the American Public Garden Association's board of directors. That's a national organization. So I've been able to travel and see other gardens and see the best of other gardens. And that's what I saw for TBG. And I'm grateful that I have a board that really sees that vision as well and believes in it as well. And another thing, too, is that, you know, being an executive director, it's really about managing change, always responding to change. And when I started, you know, we were so small. Our budget was so small, and you couldn't pay people what they were worth, and you just didn't have the budget for horticulture. And in order to be the best, you have to, you know, really, as I've always said, and Tom, you've heard me say that, that nonprofit is nothing more than a way to file your taxes. A 501c3 is just a way to file your taxes. We are a business just like every other business. And so you have to have that mentality and run an organization the same way. Of course, the blessing with that is that coupled and layered on top of that business is a mission, which, you know, we are, like many businesses, may be there for 50 years, or they may sell it, or they may be absorbed into other businesses. But nonprofits or attractions, specifically the zoo, the museum, the botanical gardens, the symphony, we are here for hundreds and hundreds of years. So there's a level of responsibility that lays on all of our shoulders to ensure that we are here for hundreds and hundreds of years.
You know, when as I was coming up through my career, we all have mentors. And I had a mentor that ran the Six Flags Corporation. Now, you think of Six Flags, you think of roller coasters. But he instilled in all of his team that you have to earn more than just the trust, but you have to really work hard for every single visitor that you invite and you enjoy coming through your front gate. And I think you kind of said it in a little bit different way than he said it. But I think what happens with some of the new managers that that I have been engaged with is that they forget that the visitors have a choice.
That's right.
Oh yeah.
And you better really truly take into effect what are they looking for? Not only what are they looking for, but what happens once they're inside. Because as we all know, as marketeers, the word of mouth is so popular. We'll never have enough marketing dollars in order to tell everyone in the world about our experiences. Of course, certainly the honor of one of the best Tucson Botanical Garden, one of the best botanical gardens in the world, helps, that's for sure. There's nothing better than national exposure and great PR that has come from that and will continue to come, that being 2024. And we all spend a lot of time thinking about how we're going to communicate. Now, some of those projects that we saw in your office mm-hmm. obviously had been developed and folks were experiencing.
Right.
Now, segment four, we're going to talk about what's new. But let's end this segment with what are some of those early on visions that became a reality that you and your team were part of?
Well, it's such a long-term vision, and it may not happen well in my lifetime, but thanks. It's there for the roadmap for the future, and that's expanding property.
Yes.
Because we are landlocked, and we do know that. And you know, we need more garden space. We need more parking. We need all of that. But what are those look like? So we went ahead and hired a master planner who specializes in botanical gardens and zoos to work with our team and the community for about a week and developed a 25-year master plan. That's not to say that that's the way it's going to be in 25 years, but it is the roadmap. And it was interesting. Once she left the property, I thought, oh my goodness, we're never going to be able to. This is going to take forever. And within 3 months, we purchased 3 houses that were to the south of us. So we have a big plan, and we are just moving forward with it inch by inch. And it's not about today. And I keep telling people who say, well, that's going to take forever. Well, it's not about today. It's about tomorrow. It's about your children, your grandchildren, and what they're going to experience. Because I always remind my board that that when the Fry's property, the grocery store in Alvernon, it was offered to them for $250,000. That, you know, I always say, do you want the board of the future to say what you say about the board of the past? And when I bring that up, there's never a problem with thinking about expansion.
Yeah, there's a lot of parks that I was engaged in over the years. And I often heard, if they only had the vision.
Yeah, right.
And that's a really interesting aspect of your job that you just mentioned regarding, you know, the vision that has to really be in everybody's mind. You don't have to think about the day-to-day all the time. Let's think about what we are and what we're going to become. So we're here at Jump In on KVOI, 10:30 a.m., and we'll be back with our final segment with my guests, Michelle and Adam from the Tucson Botanical Gardens. Good morning, Tucson. We're back with here at KVOI, 10:30 a.m., with a new show called Jump In. Every single weekday, there's a new speaker from the community talks about how they have jumped in and really made a difference. And we have, as our guests here today, two of those folks that jump in every day, Michelle and Adam from the Tucson Botanical Gardens. Just a reminder, Ed Ackerley will be here tomorrow at 9 o'clock with a bunch of guests to talk about what they're doing in the community. And also, I want to do a little bit plug for our next Thursday show, which is pretty special, more of a kind of a personal show with me, Steve Ochoa, former Channel 13 executive, and also worked for me, and Tim Vimmerstedt. We mentioned him a couple of times today, very much a marketing genius, worked at the Desert Museum and Old Tucson and Rawhide. And we're going to talk about what it takes to really go out and promote your attractions. It's kind of like a business-to-business kind of thing, but we hope that there'll be some things that you'll learn and you'll be able to share with your staff as well. So, Michelle, what is going to happen in the future? We talked a little bit about the master plan, nothing in detail, but I'm sure you have some favorite things that you and the planner and the community have come up with. So we want to take our last segment, what's happening now and what's going to be happening in the future. And let's make sure we talk a bit about how it's one of Tucson's favorite places to have your wedding at as well.
That's right. Well, we are a very favorite spot for weddings and meetings. I don't know if you know, Tom, but we opened a new store in the Grant and Alvernon Shopping Center called the Gardens Green Shop.
I did not know that.
Yes, it's pretty exciting.
This is a show of first, folks.
It is a first. So yeah, we're open. And if you know, our gift shop is really, truly at the Gardens, one of the best in town. And it focuses very much on a lot of items that visitors would like to take home with them or in their own yard. But the Gardens Green Shop focuses more on gardening products. So come visit. It's open 7 days a week, the Gardens Green Shop in the Grant and Alvernon Shopping Center.
Just another way to share your mission and your vision.
That's right. Absolutely. And then, of course, we've got incredible exhibits coming up. We have exhibits going on right now, Washed Ashore, Art to Save the Sea, which is larger-than-life sculptures made from debris from the ocean. It's very cool to see jellyfish in the Sonoran Desert.
It is.
And
it,
that opens until, that goes until June 30th. In the galleries, we have an Antarctica Journey to the Bottom of the World Photography exhibit by Vicky Stromey and Catherine Harold. And then in Legacy and Friends House, we have, we're showcasing the plants of the University of Arizona's Arboretum. So there are botanical illustrations, which are absolutely beautiful. But then coming up, Mother's Day, we're going to open the Great Garden Express. Now, this is pretty special. This has been on my vision list for years. There's a gentleman named Paul Bussey who was a landscape architect and an architect on the East Coast, who gave up his practice of building buildings and decided to build trains, G-gauge trains?
Yes.
Yes, and I don't know where he started, but I saw his work at the New York Botanic Garden for the Christmas holiday show in their conservatory, and that he had replicated the downtown New York in all natural products with twigs and bark and leaves. And I also saw the show in Tennessee, and I saw it at Longwood Gardens. And so it's been all over the country. He is world-renowned for his train designs. And this is the first time west of the Mississippi that his trains will appear. We've commissioned him to create a permanent train for the Tucson Botanical Garden. And it will feature not only trains, of course, but three levels. You'll walk under, you'll see them at eye level, they'll be lower, there'll be a waterfall. They'll be replicating some of the geography of Arizona, Canyon Diablo, Sabino Canyon, and then tucked amidst Adam's incredible plantings that he's working on will be missions of the Southwest and national park architectural features. So this is going to be something like, this is a piece of art, but yet fun.
Yeah, you know, when we were trying to decide where do we put Tucson Botanical Gardens in our category list, we, of course, thought of nature. And that's where you belong. But you also belong in the arts and cultural section as well. And thank goodness we have some software now where we can put all the attractions that are part of the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance in multiple categories, because some folks go visit according to a restaurant. You know, I went barbecue today, so they look at the barbecue section. Likewise with the attractions. I want to go to the natural outdoor attractions. But having arts and culture, you know, as part of really your marketing message is really wonderful to hear. And trains, oh my goodness, I had Lionel trains when I was growing up, I remember when my dad my mom decided to move, and he didn't share with us what he was going to sell, and he sold our Lionel train set.
Oh,
and
no.
I, for years, I've been trying to get them back.
Oh,
and
Tom.
And because everything back then was not made out of plastic.
Right.
And every year was a Christmas tradition. And I know that going to the Tucson Botanical Gardens has a lot of tradition when family and friends come into town. And one of those, we are going to have a special show just on that, which is their holiday promotion called Lights Up. Now, they were in their second year and really boosted your attendance, I understand.
Oh, it's been incredible.
And Adam, you were a big part of that, so this is kind of what we call the teaser of our next show. We'll probably won't do it until maybe October or November. Yeah. But I had the opportunity to be part of a documentary featuring what does this mean, and so we really enjoyed getting to know some of the other community leaders that were supporting Lights Up. So when you have a special event, you kind of attack it a little bit differently, if I could use that word, with passion. Yeah. And you had just mentioned that with this train exhibit. You know, this is something you don't want to just go in and view by yourself. You want to bring the whole family, don't you?
We want to bring to Tucson, through our exhibitions and our plant collections, things that people cannot see in their own backyard.
Very good.
And we want to take it to the level of just beauty and excellence. You know, we always don't hit the mark, but we sure do shoot for it. And if we don't hit it this year, we're going to hit it next year or the year after.
Yeah, I think sharing the botanical gardens with the community has really helped you stand out. One of the reasons why the attractions are what we call in the industry a destination driver is because, yeah, you can go to the Denver Botanical Gardens, and I bring that up because that gentleman actually ran the Desert Museum for a while. But when you go to the Desert Botanical Gardens or you go to any other botanical gardens, you're going to enjoy your trip, your visit. But when you go to the Tucson Botanical Gardens, I almost call it TBG. That's what I kind of called it back in my county days. You're going to see something like you mentioned. You're not going to see it anywhere else. And the vision is spot on. Obviously, you have a few things you have to check off with the community. And your board is very interactive, isn't it?
They're very supportive, yes.
And the mark of a good nonprofit is how active your board is. Folks, we've had a great time with Michelle and Adam from the Tucson Botanical Garden. So get out and go see the Botanical Gardens, because you're not going to see anything like that anywhere. Dr. Ackerley will be here on tomorrow at 9 a.m. And don't forget about the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, and go and visit your favorite attraction while you're in our region. You